Hello, I'm John Ellis. Welcome to episode 8 of Pittodrie PS, the predominantly Dons-based podcast, featuring not just the Dons first team, but a look across age groups and genders at the club. And we look at the respective progress of Cove and Peterhead too, as well as the North East local representatives in the Highland Leagues and juniors, and not just football, but any sport making headlines in the North East of Scotland, or featuring someone from the North East of Scotland. Joining me for this journey, as always, Dave McDermott and Andrew Shiney. So here we are recording this episode on the morning of Tuesday, 28th September. Wondering if we could just run last week's episode and would anyone notice? Because it's much the same result I'm feeling, and we sure as hell don't really want to talk about it. It's a bit like group therapy, this. I didn't even stick around long enough to find out whether we were booed off after that match in Paisley against Simonon. I'll find out from the gents in seconds. First up, though, as always, let's hear what the manager had to say in the aftermath of the game. Here's Stephen Glass.
Anytime you go to 10, it's going to be difficult. Anytime you give away the goals that we give away, it's going to be difficult as well. So like, there's no hiding away for that fact. For 50 minutes, yeah, we look like we're going to win a game, but the game lasts for 90 plus, and we know that. So it's disappointing, but it's important that the players pick themselves up and we go again next week.
His overall thoughts on the match?
I think there's a disappointment in the goals that we gave away. I think a good footballing team in St Mirren will pick holes in you, but it's important that when you're 2-1 up, you've got 10 men, you're tough, you're hard to score against, and we kind of gave them a couple of goals. Good finish for the first, well, the one that made it 2 each, but you give teams goals, you're in danger of losing games, and that's what happened again today.
And on the loss of another 3 goals from his defence.
I think it's been individual mistakes. I think as a unit, it's actually looked all right. I think the individual mistakes are costing us pretty severely. To me, it's really clear, it's really obvious, but you cannot legislate for individual mistakes, the ones that we've been given. When you're a footballer, it comes down to your individual performance a lot of the time. Are you capable of staying in a team and affecting a team positively? We've got a big group of players, so it's important that the players are going to know there's a competition for places right across the board, and it's something that's real at a club like this. You cannot continue making mistakes and expect to stay in the team.
Scorer of the Dons goal that anybody knew anything about, Christian Ramirez.
Showed great resilience to bounce back after that early goal, especially the way things have been going. And then to control the game with the 2 goals and didn't feel any danger from them. Felt like we were on track to be able to comfortably close this game out, and split decision completely turns the tide. And it's one of those that when things are going bad and you think you're getting yourself out of a situation, something else happens. So just stick together and get ready for a big one next week.
And from the opposition's point of view, St Mirren boss Jim Goodwin.
I thought we started the first half really well and, you know, deservedly went in front. The middle part of the first half was a little bit disjointed from our point of view. We didn't get to grips with some of the rotation and some of the movement of the Aberdeen players, particularly Hedges dropping into the midfield and creating a bit of an overload there. We managed to sort that at half-time. Unfortunately, found ourselves going in front and then going behind again, similar to last weekend. And that's something that we're going to have to try and address, because we can't continuously need to keep coming from behind to get a point or get 3 points. But in saying that, I think there's, you know, the second goal for Aberdeen should have been a foul in our favour. There's a clear block in the back post, and I would have hoped that the linesman would have spotted that and gave Willie Collum some assistance. But great character again from the players, not to let the heads go down, not to let the game get away from them. And I thought we managed the game really, really well in the second half. You know, people will rightly point out the fact that, you know, we're playing against 10 men and we've got that extra man. But I think over the years and being in football for a hell of a long time, it's not easy to break down 10 men. You know, they got 2 banks of 4 in there, Aberdeen, and the boys had to be patient, continue to move it from side to side and wait for those gaps to appear. And thankfully for us, they did.
Okay, I'm going in. First of all, Dave, were they booed off this weekend? And what were your thoughts after that one?
My thoughts, first of all, I mean, here we are, episode 8 of Pittodrie PS, which seemed a great idea at the time.
Maybe we're the curse, Dave.
8 games unbeaten without a win. And there was booze at the end. And looking through social media, there's even some fairly calm people normally starting to get are really fed up with the way things are going. And it is worrying, because we were so in control in that first half. A great, great goal from Ramirez to put us 2-1 up. And, you know, the worrying thing for me was obviously individual errors once again from players that you don't expect it from. And also the fact that we didn't seem to be able to hold on to a lead when we lost a man, you know, and which is, you know, how often have you seen teams down to 10 men where they just change their shape and they manage to shut up shop and see the game out? You know, it's all about managing the game, but we couldn't do that. And again, that air of inevitability when they equalised that we're going to get a third, and it's just very, very depressing at the moment.
Yeah, I thought our misery was set to continue for sure with additional bad luck when that first goal went in. And it sort of bobbled about and around and over, Joe. And I know there are those who say he should have done better with it, but I'm trying to be charitable and reasonable at this point. It was all over the place and it seemed to take an age to go in. Seconds later, though, Andrew, up the other end, and the ball coming off the back of Scott Brown's leg, which he still knows nothing about. And you're wondering if maybe that luck's changed. If we're going to try and assess and be as positive as possible, could you say on the basis of that first half there was improvement?
Yeah, there was definitely improvement. I mean, Aberdeen looked very dangerous going forward in the first half. I thought Terry Jenks, who played a pivotal role in 51 minutes of the match, shame it hadn't been 90 minutes of the game, could have been very, very different. But he started very brightly. Aberdeen were on the front foot. The return of Ryan Hedges was very positive. Jim Goodwin said that he caused St Mirren lots of problems because he drifts around. He doesn't drift around aimlessly. He drifts around causing problems for the opposition and creating openings for his teammates. And that's what was happening. And when we went 2-1 up, I thought it was just a matter of time before it was 3-4, to be perfectly honest, because Aberdeen were playing well. But then that pivotal moment came in the 51st minute when Terry Jenks was sent off. The second yellow card, no quibble at all about. It wasn't malicious. He was stretching, trying to win a ball back that had broken away from him. Got to receive a wee nudge in the back from one of the St Mirren players, but he did catch Jamie McGrath in the ankle. But again, I felt that Willie Collum, he's too quick with the cards at times. But it was a yellow card. What I would have a quibble with is the first yellow card. I don't think Teddy Jenks even touched Marcus Fraser, who made such a meal of that, hurled himself about 4 yards, crashing into the advertising boards at the side of the park, screaming like he'd been absolutely assassinated. When you saw the replays, I don't think there's any contact from Teddy Jenks at all. And there, maybe the assistant referee, who would have had a clear view down the line of what happened, could have helped Willie Collum. But as I say, he's so quick to whip out a card that he'll never change his mind. But that apart, I agree with what Dave said. We should have been able to regroup. There's enough experience in that group of players who were on the pitch that they could have got themselves together, shut the back door. Jim Goodwin, it looked like a tactical masterstroke bringing Curtis Main on, because up until the sending off, St Mirren really hadn't tested Aberdeen defensively. And he brought Curtis Main on. And I think a lot of people thought, oh, no, here we go again for the second week in a row. It's going to be a striker who didn't have a great time at Pittodrie scoring a winning goal against us. Now, whether the ball touched Curtis on its way in, I don't know. But I hate to say this, Joe Lewis has got to bear the brunt of the blame, or the majority of the blame, for goals 1 and 3. It was, first of all, a poor clearance that led to Conor Ronan's first goal. And then I really don't know what was going through his head. He's got to keep his eye on the ball. He should just be wiping everything out that's in front of him. How many times are you going to see a keeper come out, punch a ball clear, and take the striker with him, and nothing's given against the keeper? That's what should have been his thought. But as I say, I'm not sure what Joe was thinking about. And unfortunately, it's all too reminiscent of too many mistakes that Joe has made this season. His clean sheet record of 1 in 14 games is not good. There's no getting away from it. You can make excuses that it's an unsettled defence in front of him. It's an untried, an untested, an inexperienced back four in front of him. But still in all, Joe has been round the block often enough. He's played more than 500 games in his senior career. He should be able to organise that. And, you know, anything that comes beyond the defence, he should be able to deal with it far better than he's doing at the moment.
Okay, a lot to pick apart there, Andrew. First of all, that sending off, you mentioned Marcus Fraser. I actually thought he could have been sent off before that.
I think he should have been. I mean, yeah, on the same basis as Teddy Jenks getting sent off, because it was his next foul after the one that he'd been booked for. It wasn't as though it was a case of persistent fouling from Teddy Jenks. Marcus Fraser caught Johnny Hayes just as badly as Teddy Jenks caught Jamie McGrath. But Willie Collum had obviously decided, I've done, got my red card out of the way for the day. I'm not going to bother with another one.
Look, he's on commission.
Well, it's you almost feel with Willie Collum that he's like that. He can be so inconsistent. He'll have mad spells where he just books everything that moves. And then he'll allow things to go unchallenged. And that's what players get really irked about, is the inconsistency of referees. You could see, I mean, I did ask Stephen Glass about it after the game, and Stephen very diplomatically said, I don't recall anything like that. Well, Stephen, you must have seen about eight of your players rushing at Willie Collum with the hand up in the air and the imaginary card in the hand saying, why is he not getting another card? But you can't put it all down to simply a red card for Teddy Jenks that cost Aberdeen the game. It changed the dynamic of the game, but Aberdeen, as Dave said, should have been able to manage the situation far, far better.
I've never trusted Willie Collum. He looks like a meerkat. A sending off, which technically, as Andrew says, merited it, and one which completely changed the flow and feel of the game, Dave. But even with 10 men, as you've said, you should have made more of an impact than we did. We just got steamrolled, didn't we? I mean, every ball over the top, you think, oh no, here's another goal.
Yeah, and we played like a team bereft of confidence after the sending off, which was the exact opposite as from what we've been playing up to that point. I loved Andrew's phrase earlier on, absolutely assassinated, which is not a phrase you hear that often. it was very, very disappointing and worrying because, you know, as Andrew touched on, Joe is, you know, just making too many mistakes for a keeper of his undoubted top quality, and that's spreading through the team. David Bates, I thought, looked really not up to the speed. I mean, he was at fault in the first as well, and the third goal, he ended up committing himself a wee bit early, and it's just right now we just need to. I think we do need to change something because it's just not happening for Aberdeen with the approach that they're adopting right now.
It's a sort of back to basics period, isn't it? Where you have to just go back to the drawing board and do the simple things well. Typically for Joe, slightly later, he made a really good save, blocking with his legs. But that's one change that hasn't yet been made, and you feel maybe on the cards with Gary Woods coming in for Joe, Dave. By his own admission, I think Joe would say his distribution from kicking isn't the best. It probably resulted in the first goal because he had a clearance to make. It went straight to St Mirren player. The pressure was straight back on. He's been struggling a little, whether that's just a nervousness through the entire team or defence, who knows, but it's certainly there. And although managers rarely want to change their keeper, you get the feeling it may just be coming, Dave.
Jim Leighton made a career out of not being able to kick the ball properly. So Aberdeen's best ever goalkeeper. So, but yeah, I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, Joe's a top professional, but it may be as much for the defence's perspective, bringing Gary Woods for at least for the game on Sunday just to freshen things up and see if that makes any difference. But, you know, that's why Stephen has paid the money he is to make that type of decision. But I don't think you can keep it going on week after week. And Joe will be well aware that he's going through a confidence crisis, whatever, in terms of making these mistakes, which are so uncharacteristic.
On the positive side, Andrew, thought Ramirez took his header really well, whether the goal should have stood or not.
Absolutely, and I've got no problem with the goal standing because when you watch it, watch any set piece, there's players blocking each other. When a set piece delivery comes into the box, there's probably only about three players with their eyes in the ball. Everybody else is looking at their opponent, pushing them out the road or trying to make space or whatever. If you watch it, Ramirez makes a really good run, peels off his defender who doesn't react. It's obviously one that's been worked on the training ground. But if you watch Scott Brown, all he does is stand his ground. He doesn't push Marcus Fraser out the road or anything like that. It's Fraser who's complaining. Another guy who had a pivotal role in the game on Sunday. But he's complaining that he can't get to the ball because Scott Brown's blocking his path. What's Brown supposed to do? Jump out the road and say, on you go, Marcus. You go and run towards the ball. No, of course he's not going to do that. I thought Scott Brown was perfectly entitled to stand where he did and to hold that position. He doesn't have to yield anything to the opposition. But let's look at the positive side of the goal. Brilliant delivery from Calvin Ramsey, a really good movement from Christian Ramirez, and a superb header into the top corner. An absolute picture goal. Jim Goodwin, had that been scored at the other end, would not have been saying, you know what, the assistant referee should have been helping Willie Collum and saying that my man blocked Aberdeen defender. Parcel of the game.
Yeah, well, it's amazing, isn't it, how many seasons have we spoken about Scott Brown in a negative sense, and here we are. And he's our hero at corners or balls into the box. I think it's been individual mistakes. I think as a unit, it actually looked all right, said Stephen. Now, whether you agree with that statement or not, if you're dropped for the next game, it dents your confidence, doesn't it? Because you think, well, I'm one of the folk to blame. Will Stephen ring the changes again before the Celtic game, Dave, do you think?
He might. I mean, you look at who hasn't been playing recently. Niall McGinn has got a good record against Celtic. Dylan McGeoch was on the bench as an unused sub. Matty Longstaff as well. You know, players that have plenty of experience of big games. But, you know, the worrying thing is defence, because Declan Gallagher's been... He's been guilty of his share of mistakes. He's not involved at the moment. David Bates did not look comfortable at all against St Mirren. So, you know, what's he going to be like against Celtic? It's actually the two out-of-form teams that are going to meet on Sunday when Aberdeen plays Celtic. And, of course, Celtic, having not won away from home in the league since February, you know, the Dons normally begin into this thinking, brilliant, we're going to keep that run going. But I think fans of both sides will be viewing this with trepidation ahead of it. But yeah, and to answer your question, it's, other than the defensively, I don't know where the changes are going to come from. You know, with Mikey Devlin still injured, not yet ready, and still a wee few weeks away from being in contention. In the middle of the park, there is room for change. But defensively, for me, is where the main problems are at the moment, and it may be that Gary Woods gets the nod ahead of Joe on Sunday.
We've spoken so much about the likes of Jack McKenzie and Calvin Ramsey, especially with their attacking qualities and how they've done so well, Andrew. And I'm always cautious about, you know, potentially putting criticism towards any young player that's broken through into the first team. But are they absolved of guilt defensively? Is it just the central pairing that you're looking at?
Well, if you look at the three goals, they all came through the middle. It wasn't balls coming in from out wide that you felt that Jack or Calvin could have prevented. So Sunday's three calamities did come through the middle. I think, as Dave said, you know, normally you fear a little bit when Celtic are coming to town, but the way they're playing at the moment, there shouldn't be a fear factor, and particularly for the defenders. I mean, you're thinking, normally you had Odson Edwards, you had guys like Sinclair, Christie, Griffiths, etc., etc. Now you've got Albion Ayeti. And I mean, Albion Ayeti apparently had an absolute nightmare of a game against Dundee United and hasn't looked the part in any game really that he's played for Celtic. And Celtic are going through a crisis of confidence as well. They've got a massive game against Bayer Leverkusen on Thursday night before they play Aberdeen on Sunday. And the way Ange Postecoglou's luck is going just now, there'll be another two or three injured after that game. And they'll be down to the bare bones of a squad. So Dave's absolutely right. It's Scotland's two out-of-form sides that are meeting. And both sets of supporters are probably going to be hiding behind the sofa thinking, oh my God, what's my team going to produce this time? On the other hand, it could turn out to be an absolute classic of a game. But I think getting back to your point about the youngsters, I think Jack McKenzie and Calvin Ramsey both did okay on Sunday. Jack didn't get himself forward as much, although he did play in a couple of very dangerous crosses. Calvin, he produced a free kick that obviously Ramirez scored from, and his free kick that led to Scott Brown's inadvertent goal, caused problems in the St Mirren box. Defensively, they were both solid enough, although I have to say St Mirren don't play with wide men nearly as much as they did last season, for example, when you had the boy Connolly going down one side and Dormus down the other. They played with a great deal more width in their game. It's much more central, the way that they play a very narrow formation, three at the back, four in the middle of the park, without any real width. And that, unfortunately, was where Aberdeen were found wanting, was through that central area. It's going to be an interesting one to see how many changes Stephen makes. Obviously, it was a very thinly veiled threat that, if you've been making mistakes, you're going to be out of the team. But I totally agree with Dave. Where do we change it defensively? I mean, you would have thought perhaps on Sunday you could have reverted to a three-man central defence and, filled the middle of the park a wee bit more, with the fullbacks pushing on to augment what there is there in the central area. But I thought that it was very telling that Declan Gallagher was left on the bench for the entire match. It suggests to me a lack of trust in him from his manager. And until such time as, obviously, Stephen Glass sees something better happening in training, which is the only place he's going to see Declan Gallagher playing, I rather fear for his future at Pittodrie.
Yes. Okay. Well, you say you don't know what changes Stephen might make. Well, you're going to get the chance to do it yourself in a real life version of Football Manager coming up. of course, the Celtic tie is always tasty, but even more this time, with it being it's the first occasion the two have met since Scott Brown travelled to the Northeast to take up the role here, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. They'll be keen to prove that he made the wrong decision and they're doing just fine without him, won't they?
I'm quite sure that Celtic will be delighted to see their old captain and even more delighted if they can put one over him. Equally, Scott Brown will welcome his old buddies back and he will be telling his Aberdeen teammates, come on, we have a real chance to turn things around. And what a lift it would be to break this barren run by beating Celtic. I was looking back through the records to see when the last really bad run was, which everybody's referring to, the 11 games between the 27th of January, 2010, and the 27th of March, 2010. 11 games, 5 draws, 6 defeats. But included in that was a 4-4 draw with Celtic at Pittodrie. Unfortunately, there was also a Raith Rovers Cup exit, which is mirroring this one. The Celtic game normally takes care of itself.
Yeah.
And, the critics of Aberdeen say, won't it be so typical? They'll lose to rubbish teams like St Mirren and Raith Rovers, and then they'll produce it against one of the big two from Glasgow.
Yeah, so if it's 3 points, Andrew, I'll take it. I'll take it from
absolutely,
anybody at this point.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not bothered at all what the critics say if Aberdeen win on Sunday, as long as Aberdeen win on Sunday.
Now, I will say this is far from scientific. It's only me passing comment on what I've seen online in forums, on social media, that where there was discontent brewing, there are now fans sort of breaking formation and saying, no, it was a project we tried. It's not worked. We need to change the manager. It must be too soon for that, mustn't it, Dave? I mean, realistically, though, how long do you think Stephen will get to get this right?
Difficult to tell. I mean, he will. The fact that he is Dave's appointment, Stephen will give him a wee bit of time, but if the criticism gets severe and if the criticism gets personal for the chairman, then you can very well see him making a decision. You know, friend or no friend, that will count for nothing at the end of the day if the team isn't winning. But I do think it's far too early to be talking in those terms. But come the end of October, if we're sitting down near the bottom of the league, then there may be a rethink because it just can't go on. And I remember that run under Mark McGee vividly, and it was horrendous.
Yes, it certainly was. I'm not hearing anything different, Andrew, apart from maybe the use of the term individual mistakes. and they've got a big squad, so changes may be coming. Let's look at that. Starting with the defence, breached every time in the last 11 matches. Now, you've got to go back to the league game against Dundee United to find the last time we kept a clean sheet. So a big squad, looking at the defence, who do you switch out and who comes in to replace them?
A big squad, but lacking defenders. That's what you're looking at. Okay, injuries have cost you two international players, Michael Devlin and Andrew Considine, but you have to make allowances for that. At the moment, we only have, I would suggest, one defender who could come in to change things around, and that is Declan Gallagher, who, as I said earlier, appears to have lost the trust of the manager. So I can see it being the same four that line up, possibly with a change of goalkeeper. Now, Gary Woods is an excellent keeper. We saw that when he deputised for Joe when he was injured, and he will be ready to step into the breach and do his bit. But it would be a massive call to drop your club captain. And, you know, Joe has shown over the years what a valuable player he is for Aberdeen. I think in his own heart of hearts, he will know that he's not playing to the form that he's capable of. Whether they can sort something out this week, I'm quite sure that Joe will be working like a bear with Gordon Marshall to try and eradicate mistakes. They'll be looking through all the things that people are pointing the finger at and trying to sort things out. There'll be lots of focus on clearing with both feet, with, you know, organising the defence in front of them. I think the communication between the defenders at times has been lacking, and between goalkeeper and defenders has been missing. So it's something that I'm quite sure that a huge focus will be put on in training this week. And then it's up to the management staff to look at everything and say, right, we seem to have sorted that out. Can we trust it to go forward into Sunday? We don't know, because we're not seeing what's going on the training ground. But from the outside looking in as uneducated observers, I would say that the likeliest defensive change is going to be Gary Woods for Joe Lewis. I can't see the back four being changed as things are just now.
Okay. Same thing for midfield and attack, Dave. Who comes in? Who moves out?
Well, I mentioned, you know, McGinn, McGeoch, and hopefully Marley Watkins will be fit again, Andrew. Not sure what the latest is with him.
Well, I just heard last week that he certainly wasn't going to be available for the St Mirren game, but there was nothing said about you know, a timescale and the hamstring injury that has ruled him out. But if it is a hamstring, it tends to be 3-4 weeks. Yeah. And I don't think that they'll want to risk Marley Watkins, because, okay, the other options are relatively limited, but you do have other options there.
Yeah, you've got Conor McLennan, obviously, who missed out again.
Dylan McGeoch, you said, Dave, as well.
Dean
Campbell.
Dean Campbell will do a job for you. I mean, Dean will not let anybody down. You know, Ryan Hedges has had these first 70-odd minutes back, so he'll be a wee bit sharper, so that is a bonus for the side, although I see today that Blackburn are looking to be making a January transfer window bid for the Welsh international. So,
do they have any defenders?
Swap them. But like Andrew, I don't think there'll be lots of changes. I think goalkeeper is possibly the obvious one. I would agree with what Andrew said about Declan Gallagher not having the trust in the manager at the moment. So hopefully he can get that sorted out, because he is an international defender and we need him to be there ready to play. And but, you know, I think apart from players I've mentioned, I don't think there'll be too much switching things around.
And at the same time, as you're doing that, Andrew, as you are moving, you know, sort of chess pieces around the board, you do have to try and keep some sense of team consistency to develop upon. Or are things that bad right now that you can literally rip things up every week till you find something that delivers and then work from that as a foundation?
don't think they're too far away from getting it right. As the manager said, you can never legislate for individual errors. The only thing you can do is replace that individual who's making the errors and hope that his replacement doesn't replicate the same calamities. Because it's such a results-driven business, the performances are being overlooked by what the final score is at the end of the 90 minutes. I didn't think there was too much wrong with the performance, certainly in the first half at St Mirren. It changed completely when they went down to 10 men. It was a worry that they weren't able to adapt to that. But 11v11, providing we keep everybody on the park against Celtic, I think we should be looking at the problems that Celtic have got. They don't have the most watertight of defences. Starfelt and Cameron Vickers are not working well together in the middle of defence there. They are chopping and changing their fullbacks. Midfield doesn't look to be anything like as potent as it has been in recent years. And attack-wise, as I said, Albion Ayeti is a disaster. The boy Yota looks a bag of tricks, but sometimes these bags of tricks can be very, very inconsistent. On the other side, Abada has made a bright start to his Celtic career. So I don't think Celtic are the major obstacle that they've been in previous years, but we're only interested in what Aberdeen are going to do, and that's what Stephen will say when we speak to him, whenever it is, pre-match. You know, he won't be interested in any travails that Celtic are going through at the moment. All he's interested in is in the Aberdeen team. And he feels that what he's getting from the group of players is what he's looking for, but there's still these individual problems that need to be ironed out before everything clicks into place and the jigsaw is complete. So I don't think it's going to be a case of rip it all up and let's start again. I don't think we've got a big enough squad to be able to do that at the moment. We can't just throw everybody out and say, right, we're going to have Gary Woods in goal. We're going to have, who's the under-21 fullback? Right. Okay, well, we'll have to put Calvin Ramsey in there. Who's the central defenders for the under-18s? They're kids. They're not anywhere near ready to be playing first team football. So we can't just pick it all out and start afresh. Much though some people would like to say that because they see that the under-18s are winning 4-0 against Kilmarnock on Friday night, and they're saying, right, him and him, they should be in the first team. No, they're not ready for it yet. You've got to work with what you've got and just, as you said earlier, maybe get back to doing the basics because they're good footballers. Make no mistake about it. There's no question about the effort that's being put in. It's just things haven't quite all gelled and haven't all fitted into place. And the sooner it happens, the better, obviously. But let's not get into panic mode just yet. We're seven games into a 38-game league season. There's 93 points to be played for, as Roy Aiken would have told me. It's not time to panic just yet.
Like I say, nothing at all scientific, but I would say from the online comments I've seen, perhaps a growing discontent, which is perhaps unsurprising given the results. Other things I've noted coming from the fans talking about a really difficult month of fixtures looming, potentially anyway, and not seeing where the points are going to be gained, talking about it as the hunt for Red October. Because if you can't find even a wry smile, then all is probably lost. Okay, coming on to the next game, Celtic at home, another TV fixture. I suppose one of the very few encouraging things is that they're not going great guns either, especially away from home. So can we possibly entertain positive thought here, Dave? You're the guy that I'm looking at. How do you see the shape of the game for this one? Will we have as much possession as we've had in these previous matches where we haven't turned the screw?
Yeah, bizarrely, I think that the fact that, you know, Andrew touched the fact that Leverkusen game on Thursday night should take quite a bit out of the Celtic squad, and like Aberdeen, their ability to make wholesale changes is limited. So, and I think Aberdeen, with having had, you know, we've had the full week to prepare for this one, we should be the fresher come Sunday lunchtime. And bizarrely, I'm quite confident in this one. So, and when we come to prediction, I'll tell you why.
This is what I said last week. I said, I don't know why, but I've got a good feeling about this.
You are wrong.
And we both went 0-0, and it was a 5-goal thriller.
Yeah, well, I'm not the expert here. We always appear to be that team which others use to reignite their form, Andrew. And, you know, St Mirren will be the obvious example that we can say here. They haven't won at home for goodness knows how long. Can this be the game where we do it for ourselves?
You would go seeing all these things about St Johnstone win their first league against Aberdeen. St Mirren win their first league against Aberdeen. Yeah. Celtic win their first away game against Aberdeen. No, we don't want that. Yes, it would be nice to think that this could be the game that reignites Aberdeen. There will be a passionate crowd inside Pittodrie, all willing Aberdeen on. And what better stage than a game against Celtic to, as you say, reignite the form, let the blue touch paper step back, and let's hope that it is a positive October, because it is a massive month for Aberdeen. Celtic, Dundee, Hibs, Rangers and Hearts. Massive challenges, every one of them. Even Dundee down at Dens Park, where we've got a fantastic record, will be a tough, tough game. But if you can get 3 points on Sunday, as I said, I don't think Aberdeen are that far away from getting it all right. And a victory on Sunday would be maybe not the final piece in the jigsaw, but the piece would be starting to slot into place.
Okay, let's go for the predictor in this one then. Aberdeen versus Celtic, Dave.
2-1 Aberdeen.
Andrew.
What's so funny about that?
Dave, I've spent 20 years doing, you know, what's the score going to be? And it's always Aberdeen, and I love you for it, Dave. I know it's coming. It's like, you know, when you watch a cartoon and you know that the hammer's going to hit the head of Tomcat. It's that same thing. You know, Dave's going to go for an Aberdeen win. Andrew?
I'm disappointed that Dave doesn't see us keep a clean sheet. I would have thought 2-0 would have been better than 2-1. It would be certainly less nerve-wracking, I'm quite sure. I have a sneaking suspicion Aberdeen are going to win this one, you know. I'm going to go 1-0 for Aberdeen.
Peak Aberdeen would be a win this one and then go and get beat by Dundee. That would be peak Aberdeen, wouldn't it? And then everyone piles in and says, you only raise your game for the Glasgow teams. That's peak Aberdeen. But let's not look ahead to next week yet. On to the AFC women, back in SWPL1 action again at the weekend. Now 3 in a row undefeated, ending an away trip to Spartans with a hard-fought goalless draw in blustery conditions, which contributed to a mostly scrappy game. But a third clean sheet in a row and going pretty well, Dave. Gail Gilmore for Don's first team.
Spartans are no mugs, so to get a point down there is not the worst result. So I think the girls will be absolutely delighted with the way they've started their top flight campaign. And, as I say, a 0-0 draw, another clean sheet, is all good, and Gail Gilmore, who you mentioned, is proven to be a top goalkeeper, which is brilliant, and she's very, very young as well.
Next up for Aberdeen Women, back home at Balmoral Stadium this coming Sunday when they host Hearts. And for the under-18s, you mentioned this slightly earlier, Andrew, a mixed week. So Barry Robson's side go down 3-1 to Rangers away, which was just after we recorded this show last week. Followed by a 4-0 victory over Kilmarnock at Cormac Park on Friday with doubles for both Ryan Duncan and Alfie Babbage in a scoreline which I hear didn't even flatter the young Dons, Andrew. Take us through those games and what's next for Barry's team.
The two games, Aberdeen could very well have won both of them because they had some glorious opportunities that they passed up at the Rangers training centre. Ryan Duncan hit the post when it was 1-1 just before half-time. They had, I think, Barry counted 4 1-and-1s with the goalkeeper that they didn't convert from. And then it was a soft penalty, the first Rangers goal. Surprise, surprise. nothing changes at any level of football. But then we equalised from a penalty, which is an absolute stonewaller, which it has got to be given against Rangers at any level. As I say, Ryan Duncan hit the post. We missed some great chances. And then we gave away a couple of schoolboy goals in the second period, but the intensity from Aberdeen was there for all to see. And it was probably the hardest game that Rangers have had. They had 4 players down with cramp as the game went into its final stages, which ended up with 9.5 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the second half. Wow. I thought we were never going to get home. I thought the referee had lost his watch. But they bounced back from that disappointment with a very, very good team performance, I thought, against Kilmarnock. Kilmarnock had a couple of opportunities when they hit the woodwork in the first half, but Aberdeen scored their goals at the right times. As you say, two for Babbage, two for Ryan Duncan. His tally now 9 for the season in 7 games, I think it is, in the under-18s. So they're going well. Next up, they don't have a game this week because they are the free team in the under-18 league. The next under-18 league game is away to Celtic. It's penciled in for next Friday. But before that, of course, there's the SPFL Trust Trophy game against Hamilton Accies down at New Douglas Park a week on Wednesday, when it will be majority of the young boys, but you can pull in some of the guys who are out on loan at various places, like Tom Ritchie went on loan to Huntley this week. He could play. Jack McKeever, who's also at Huntley and scored for them, by the way, at the weekend, he can play. Tyler Makita, Kevin Andrati from Fermartin, they can play. Michael Ruth should be able to play. I saw that he was credited with Falkirk's equalising goal down at Montrose at the weekend, but Seb Ross is claiming it. A slightly deflected cross that went over the keeper and dropped in at the back post. Michael Ruth applying the finishing touch, but according to Seb, the ball was in beforehand, so he's wanting that goal. It'll be an interesting one, the game down at Hamilton, because Accies haven't had the best of seasons so far in the Championship. You may recall that after we beat Arbroath, Arbroath's next game was against Hamilton, and Arbroath won 4-0. So when you went back to schoolboy days, you thought, well, if that means that should be 1-1 for us against Arbroath. 4-0 for them against Hamilton. That's 5-1 to Aberdeen against Hamilton Accies. So they'll approach it with a degree of confidence, but also a degree of trepidation, because you really don't know what you're going to be up against in terms of first team players at Hamilton. But it's not one that I think they should be worried about, to be honest, because there's a real team spirit amongst that group, and you know, there's a great chance to progress further.
Schoolboy stats are always brilliant, aren't they? Barry seems to be doing pretty well with that group. On to Cove Rangers next, back to Balmoral Stadium this weekend past, and a 1-0 win over Airdrie. The goal coming from Morgan Neal just a couple of minutes before the end. Speaking after that one, manager Paul Hartley.
It wasn't the best game of the day in terms of how we want to play, but we're in a business where you have to win, and sometimes you've got to find a way of winning, and we found that the great header for Big Scoop. It's a good ball in for Shea, a couple off the bar, so yeah, really happy with the 3 points. It's always a hard fought game against Airdrie.
And here's Cove's Harry Mill.
I thought it was the right result. I felt like we controlled the game pretty much throughout. There's periods where we weren't quite at our best. The game itself was a pretty poor game of football, but no, we're happy to come away with the 1-0. It's starting to build results on clean sheets and being solid at the back. It's what we've done the past few seasons. That's how we've picked up results, so that's good. Felt like we deserved it in the end, but like I say, still wasn't a very good game.
Sounds like a bit of a win ugly day, but a win's a win.
A win's a win, and I mean, the first half, two good sides, to be honest. They just cancelled each other out. Paul Hartley changed things for the second half, and there's no doubt we had the better of the second half, hitting the bar twice with headers from Harry Milne and also from Morgan Neal before the winning goal came in the final minute. And it was a well-worked goal. Ian Vigers switching play from left to right, substitute Leighton McIntosh feeding in Shea on the overlap, and his pinpoint cross. It was a crowded 6-yard box, but Morgan Neal wanted it more than any of the defenders at the far post, and Cove got the 3 points that makes such a difference, particularly at home in this league, because, you know, we saw again at the weekend the results so close. The majority of the first League One games, very, very tight. So to pick up 3 points at home is going to be massive, not just for Cove, but for all the teams in that league. But, you know, good 3 points against the team that we struggled against last year.
Yeah, Cove remain in third spot on goal difference, just 2 points behind leaders Queen's Park, and next up facing a trip to fifth place Alloa Athletic. Bit ahead, meanwhile, face leaders Queen's Park away, almost snatched a point before ultimately going down 3-2 away. and head back to Balmoore, second bottom, to face second top Dumbarton this coming weekend. For the Highland League teams, Fraserburgh extended their lead at the top of the table to 7 points by smashing seven past Strathspey Thistle. Second place Inverurie Locos defeated Broda 2-1 at Harlaw Park. Keith and Huntley, both 3-0 winners over Turriff and Fort William, respectively. Brechin City, both earning a 4-1 win over Forest Mechanics and Inverness Clach. In the juniors, Dave.
Well, and then there were three in the Scottish Cup after the second round games. Dice, of course, got that bye after Armadale Thistle withdrew. Banksy 4, Syngenta 2, and Brechin Victoria 1, Newmarket United 2. Elsewhere, it was a case of the run coming to an end. Aberdeen Uni lost 4-0 home to Lochee United. Carnoustie Panmure defeated Fraserburgh United 3-0. Cooter against the 2016 winners Beath, they lost 3-0 at Crombie Park, with the third goal coming very late on. So it was a decent performance from them. Bankery beaten 7-2 at Dundee East. Craigie Colony Park down 3-0 to Dundee North End. Clontanner 1, Kirkintilloch Rob Roy 6, and Peters Hill 4, Stonywood Park Vale 0. Worth also saying that on a Friday night in the Mookie.com Super League, Hermes go clear at the top of the league after defeating Dice 2-1 at Lochside Park.
Had we won the Ryder Cup, Andrew, I'm sure we could have found some sort of northeast angle to spin it on, but we didn't. We got soundly thrashed, so we'll just not talk about it. That is pretty much it for episode 8 of Pittodrie PS. We aim to publish every week on a Tuesday if we can, always looking back to the Don's previous fixtures and ahead to the next. Please remember to follow us on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you could rate and review us, tell us what you think of the show as well. We'd be very grateful. Thanks for checking out Pittodrie PS. We'll see you next time.